Welcome back to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. I'm Angela Bachman here with Brittany Sheets.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us today. And thank you to PFT 400 and the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO for sponsoring our program. And joining us right now, we've got Buck Gino on the line. Buck, welcome back.
Always great to be with you, ladies.
It's great to have you, Buck. How's Florida?
Things are going well down here. The weather's been really nice, and sitting out on the back deck.
I'm going to live vicariously through you.
Yeah, it sounds lovely.
we've been blessed. It's been a great few weeks so far. Still got a few more to go, so.
Yep.
Lucky. Although we were supposed to hit, so I didn't totally pay attention to the weather here. Just like a brief little tangent on the side. It was so sad. I woke up, it was supposed to hit 60 this weekend, but I thought that was today. So I was all excited. I didn't have to wear my winter jacket today. Then
Wrong.
I woke up and looked out my window and there was still snow on the ground. I was like, oh boy. Maybe I should bring that jacket. And then I looked at the actual weather and woke up enough to realize that was tomorrow and Sunday. That was not today. So Pennsylvania, we're seeing sunshine eventually. It's just not quite here yet.
As they say, one day longer.
Yeah, we're getting close, though. You get mid-February, then you get into March.
Yep.
It won't be long. Time flies.
Oh, yeah. So you sent some really great articles over today. I had a chance this morning to kind of read through some things. Senator Gary Peters is staying busy and representing, I wish he was my representative, man. As I say, this is a really cool thing that he has presented. Senator Peters introduced an Outsourcing Accountability Act. And what this bill would do is it would require traded companies or publicly traded companies to disclose the number of employees by country. So it would have to tell you how many jobs that they have outsourced out into another country. And they've got other supporters of this bill are U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow. Okay, I wasn't trying to pronounce her name. She's also from Michigan. There's an Indiana Democratic Senator, Rhode Island Democratic Senator, and Dianne Feinstein from California has also signed on to this, too. So he's in good company.
Yeah, it's about time because, it's really, as he says, it's hard to hold the, some of these, how many times do you walk into the store and you think, I wonder how many jobs these people actually perform here, and whether this money is going over overseas. And even though the company may brag about it, they could have double or triple the amount of jobs overseas, and you wouldn't know that because you have no idea where to find out.
Right, because the only count you have is of the jobs they have here.
Exactly. And, because quite frankly, we've had a lot of companies and corporations, you may be a surprise, were kind of lying to us for a lot of years.
Oh, yeah.
We all know, and Mr. Peters references this too, is that if the American worker, this is a stellar statement because it says it all, he says, that American workers will make the best product every time, and this legislation will help, and all we have to do is level the playing field. If we have a level playing field, we are the best to reproduce the most goods in the world.
Something I thought, the first thing I thought of when I read through this was the call centers. The call centers are the first thing that came to mind, knowing what Verizon workers just went through with their contract negotiations and some of what the AT&T call workers and people with the AT&T mobility are talking about. The fact that at the call centers particularly, they are just repeatedly year after year, they are just losing more and more jobs because of these companies are shipping them overseas. Now, that's not something I knew. I did not know, honestly, that AT&T had jobs outsourced. I mean, I feel like I probably shouldn't be too surprised. But I'm not necessarily most savvy on, who works where and what they do. But at the call centers, AT&T is a union company. And I was like, okay, not all of AT&T is organized, and I do know that. But I was surprised to know that they are taking the jobs away from the call centers and over more and more every year, moving them overseas. So we're losing that American workers so they can boast, oh yeah, we have workers here in America. But they don't realize that we're slowly figuring out through, people talking about their real stories, how many of those, I'm curious to know, how many are currently here versus overseas?
Exactly. The tough part about this thing is you've seen all the this bill is basically sort of obviously supported by the steel workers and the auto workers, and I don't suspect that they would get any pushback from any organized labor group on this because it only enhances, the money going back to the American worker and then into the American economy. And that is the biggest thing. And that would be interesting to see, you know, these are the kind of questions, you know, that I would look forward to. You know, here we have these types of press conferences, these types of things that are going on in our government today. You know, it would be great if somebody would stand up and say, okay, and here's the deal, President Trump. This is the, you know, we're talking about this Outsourcing Accountability Act, and we're wondering perhaps if you would support such. Those are the things that are supposed to be an act. But, you know, he's not going to allow that. He's going to be this giant-sized fly that's going to just fly over the around the room and not answer any question except for the fact that everybody's lying about him. See, these are the things that people should really pay attention to, because, you know, I don't know how we do that if we can't get some Republicans here pretty soon to start saying, hey, we got to start to perform in here. We can't just lying to the American public every step of the way.
Right, and isn't it interesting that this particular bill doesn't say anything about money? We're not we're not saying anything about limiting profits or taxing higher or anything like that. It's really just about transparency, and it's really about informing the American public. And then from there, people can make their own choices and, you know, support with their wallets, the companies that they want to or not. And then obviously also by virtue of having information, then, you know, people that are getting subsidies and things might get less subsidies if you know, if they're not supporting American workers. But really at the heart of this, it's really about information. And I think that that's what's so important.
You know, I guess, you know, I sent a thing around a couple weeks ago, as much as I deal on Facebook. But there was a section that talked about, you know, you think we spend a lot of money taking care of the poor. Here's the kind of money that we spend taking care of the rich.
Oh, yeah.
What you said was is that, you know, you could spend like $50 billion or $50 trillion, whatever, take a number, on social programs and things that help the poor and the needy and all these other things. And then you can spend $90 trillion on giving it back to, you know, the corporation. You know, it's like amazing that, you know, have your companies like General Electric. I mean, and they brag about it. They pay zero federal income tax. Zero.
Right.
Wow.
And that's where these, you know, this is where we got to get to in this resistance. We got to work past this fog of this guy that's going to stand up every once in a while, once a month, and degrade everybody and tell everybody how, you know, the press is terrible, they're fake, and the whole, except for his selected few. And that's kind of a smokescreen. We have to keep on message here so that the people understand what this fight's all about.
Absolutely. I do want to point out, though, that, you know, just you can't put a blanket on it. Not every subsidy is bad. Obviously, these companies that are making mm-hmm. billions upon billions of dollars don't need them. But there are lots of, I mean, the reason most of these are put in place to begin with are to help the American people. Normally, it's to help facilitate new jobs, or, you know, to help people get access to electricity, or, like, there are a million reasons why these mm-hmm. subsidies get put in place to begin with. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's more about taking a look at why they exist and making sure they're actually doing what they're supposed to do, which is what I think this bill is proposing in its essence.
But, you know, the thing is, you're never going to convince me. I mean, and I don't mean this, when you listen to especially the largest oil companies in the world, the Exxon, one of them, all of them, are getting subsidies from the government, and, you know, and look at their profit margin.
So oh yeah,
it's really hard to talk about how they give these subsidies and how they're other than putting the money in the pocket again of the richest 1%. But
right.
As you said, these are discussions that we need to have. We need to have these, and they have to stay to the forefront. We can't be basically lost in this smoke stream. Although it is probably causing, you know, I saw a statistic the other day where this is the best ratings that Saturday Night Live has had in 20 years.
I believe it.
And so, but that's okay to have that kind of humor, but the seriousness of this is just like bills like this and talking about, you know, having a true policy that's going to help everybody. So far, they haven't done anything. They talk about how they made all these, executive order, but what do? They really basically don't do anything, and most of them are waiting for the end of the where the rubber meets the road is, and that's called finance. Who's going to pay for this? I guess, like I said, it's really, really, and that's why I brought this bill up here, because this is a good piece of legislation. I don't know any reason why, other than the fact that the employers would want to say, well, it costs us too much money to get all this together. I'm sure that's going to be the argument, and really what they mean by that is that, you know, we don't want you to know what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. So, right, because they clearly have the addresses of all their employees that they're paying, so it should only take a few punches of buttons to be able to tell you where people are.
But they don't want to publicize that they're outsourcing thousands of jobs while claiming that they've created thousands of American jobs, and that's just not true.
Yep. Yeah.
Not true there.
Well, Buck, we've got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. And I've got an entertaining senator anecdote to tell you about when you come back. But we'll do that in a little bit. Hang tight, guys. I'm Brittany Sheets, and you've been listening to the Union Edge Laborist Talk Radio.
Is it really fair and balanced? I don't mean the ridiculous Fox TV channel, whose right-wing ranters mock their own PR slogan, but rather a network that actually matters in our society, America's legal system. To check the balance of the scales of justice, look at how the system treats the very rich and the poor. As we've seen, Wall Street barons have grossly fattened themselves by running frauds and scams that wreak trillions of dollars in damages to working families, homeowners, and taxpayers. Yet, not a single one of them has been indicted or even seriously pursued by the law. More recently, such corporate profiteers as GlaxoSmithKline have paid billions of dollars in fines for serious criminal acts. But the executive criminals who pulled these capers have skated free without even being charged. Now, meet Gina Ray, who is neither a CEO nor a serious offender, but a hard-hit, low-income American. She's one of hundreds who are being jailed, not by the police, but by a growing network of corporate fee chasers empowered by state legislatures to fine and imprison poor people who've committed minor infractions. Ms. Ray, an unemployed 31-year-old in rural Alabama, got caught up in this privatized probation system over a speeding ticket. Her problem mushroomed and she was unable to pay. So the corporatized legal system locked her up and hit her with company fees for each of the 40 days she was behind bars. Her original $179 ticket has now surpassed $3,000. She was not told that she has a right to a court-appointed lawyer or offered any alternatives to more fines and jail. This is Jim Hightower saying, for more information, contact Southern Center for Human Rights. They're at www.schr.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
We are the BCTGM, the union representing bakery workers. We have been joining forces with our members and thousands of community partners across America to end corporate exploitation of workers across the globe. Our campaign has its roots with the Mondelez Nabisco's firing of 600 workers at its Chicago bakery and replacing them with workers earning poverty wages in Mexico. College and university student activists have reached out to our global campaign, and the BCTGM is proud to welcome the more than 20 million students across America as partners in defeating this greed-based business model. Student voices have changed the world, and these future community and national leaders will add energy and heightened spirit to the BCTGM's consumer boycott of Mexican-made Nabisco products. Join the fight. Help change the world. Invite the Nabisco 600 team to your campus by visiting fightforamericanjobs.org. Follow us on Facebook at Nabisco 600 BCTGM Local 300.
It was 1973. Helen Reddy's song, I Am Woman, was at the top of the charts. The feminist movement was in full swing. A group of Boston women office workers started talking about how they were treated at work, how men made more money for the same jobs, how they couldn't take time off to care for their kids without putting their jobs at risk. They were feisty, empowered, and fed up. They founded 9to5, a membership organization of women working in low-wage jobs, inspiring a national hit song and movie. Whether it's fighting for better leave policies, for equal pay for equal work, to ban the box, or strengthen the safety net, 9 to 5 is on the front lines of putting our issues on the public agenda, and they're winning big. Find out more about how they're raising the bar at www.9to5.org. That's the number 9, T-O, number 5.org.
So, who's going to do what? Flashlights?
Nowhere to be found.
Emergency supply kits?
Not packed.
What about blankets?
We have an old towel.
Cell phones?
May not work.
Emergency water?
Not a drop.
Perfect. We all know where we're meeting if we're separated.
The library!
On Jones' house.
The bus stop.
And I'll be waiting here wondering where you all are. Great. It sounds like we don't have a plan.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets, and I'm here with Angela Bachman today.
Happy Friday, Brittany. You guys can find us online at theunionedge.com, on Facebook, on Twitter, on iTunes, all over the place.
And thank you to the PSEA and the Teamsters International Union for your support. Joining us right now, we've got back with us Buck Gino of Work in Progress Radio. Buck, welcome back.
It's great to be with you, ladies. It's always a pleasure.
It's great to have you, Buck.
It's a lot of fun.
So I've got a little, while we're talking about our senators, a little anecdotal piece. Senator Toomey, who's our senator here in Pennsylvania, he's a little trip and a half. So we've been doing this, the cool thing, Tuesdays with Toomey, and they've been doing these across the country at all these different places where people are doing, like, Tuesdays with your senator. I mean, Tuesdays with Toomey just kind of, you know, just rolls off the tongue. It's real nice. And it's gotten to the point where he pretty much, he hasn't been to his office. He's pretty much in hiding. His office has gotten, we actually had a couple people from Union Edge went over to just kind of check out what was going on and talk to some people last week on Tuesday. There's a couple hundred people outside his Pittsburgh office. Rumor has it he's moving his office to an undisclosed location at this moment. He hasn't really revealed where he's putting it yet. But so many people have continuously showed up that everyone's saying there's no one there. Nobody can get in. So everyone's been pushing for a town hall. You know, we want to have a town hall with you, Senator Toomey. So his response to that was, I'll hold a telephone town hall with you, that he announced 1 hour before he did it yesterday. And he did it at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, which is very inconvenient for anybody who, you know, works.
Yeah.
So he had this telephone town hall, and I went on his online last night. So he does some interaction, or shall I say his staff does interaction on Facebook. And they were promoting it, and I was reading through some of the comments, because you were supposed to comment or email them your question, and they would try to address it during the town hall. Well, from my understanding, a lot of people couldn't get into the town hall. People tried and tried and tried to call in, and they couldn't get connected. So that was a success. Not only did he do it at an incredibly inconvenient time in the afternoon whenever he was hoping most of us would be working and gave a 1 hour notice hoping most of us missed it. Apparently the people who did try to call in, a lot of people had trouble getting through, which is, I mean, no shocker if you're calling Senator Toomey at this point. And then on top of that, he said that he kind of passed off the blame, which this really made me mad. And this is why I'm ranting. He passed off the blame on the lack of being able to get a hold of his office because we're jamming up the phone lines. So he blamed his constituents for their own complaint of not being able to get a hold of him. Now, I can say also, I have been vehemently calling and emailing and expressing my opinions and faxing. I've sent him faxes, too. I have gotten consistent, really quick replies. It might take, you know, like a week or so, just because the volume is very high. And I understand that. I am very understanding of this.
And I also understand that this is an office that traditionally doesn't get a lot of feedback, that has suddenly been completely crushed with the number of people that have been responding. And most of the offices, he has several offices, and most of them are only staffed by one or two people. So I can understand why it's difficult for someone to answer the phone for 900 people that are trying to call.
Yeah, 100% understandable. But I will say, when I contact one, I contact the other, because we have two state senators,
right,
as
exactly.
is everyone. When I contact Senator Toomey, I also contact Senator Casey. Senator Casey's office has been above and beyond accommodating on getting back to me, sending emails, and I keep all of my political replies of what I send to them and what I get back from them, just, you know, for my own record, just out of curiosity here. The response rate, I finally got an email back from Senator Toomey's office about an email I sent in, like, the beginning of January, and it was, like, 3 weeks after Senator Casey's office replied back with a very nicely detailed email about Betsy DeVos, and Senator Toomey's was a lot to be desired. Let me leave it at that. But it's just like, if this to me is a sure sign, and unfortunately this man has been elected in for 6 more years. Unfortunately. He just got elected in. But I will say, people are very angry. And it's not, and he's saying, oh, it's just, you know, the some of these Democrats, this and that, whatever. Whoever he wants to pass the blame to, people are angry, and we are his constituents. We're not just a bunch of paid protesters. We're not a bunch of people clogging up the phone lines. We're your constituents, and we are angry and upset with you.
Well, and the part about it that I think is most upsetting is that he takes so long. He kind of refuses to take a stand for a really long time. You know, he does this consistently. He'll sort of hang back and wait to see what everyone else is doing. I don't know what his process is or why it takes him so long, but he doesn't really take a very strong stand on anything. So I feel like I would have a lot more respect if he was going to come out right away and be like, listen, I really am for Betsy DeVos and this is why, and have that strong opinion, and then we would be free to voice our opposition, but that he would have that strong opinion, and then theoretically anyone who agrees with him would also call him and be like, yes, this is what I want you to do. But it doesn't seem that way to me. It seems like he'd prefer to, like, hang out in the background and then just, like, and then cast his vote and then be done with it, you know, rather than, like, stating his position the way that Casey did in his response to you.
Well, there, you know, that's a phenomenon that's going all over the country. And then basically, you said it best, with all these people that are going to these town halls, and what they're finding out is that they're not going there to answer questions about perhaps, other than the Affordable Care Act, some certain types of legislation, but they're there to have to answer for Donald Trump.
Right.
And that's why they're going into hiding.
Can I just say that sucks? I'm sorry, that sucks. You have to answer for Donald Trump.
Well,
I feel bad for you a little bit. Just a little bit.
But that's what they're doing, is they're kind of running and hoping that perhaps this will die off. That's why it's so very, very important to continue doing what we're doing, and these groups that get together to visit these representatives and senators' offices, and that's how you get a point across. And you know, and you always hear these people complain about the resistance and how this and that and all this. And they wouldn't complain if it wasn't making a difference, and it is making a difference, and that's what we have to do, unfortunately, but that's how we have to deal with this so-called president we have. We can't, you know, treat it like it's a policy debate, because it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't shown any real, shall I say, intelligence, basically, on such things as tax policy and other things, you know, to really go forward. But he does know how to stir up and create anger, so that's what we have to do, is to basically continue the resistance, and next time we go to a meeting, or next time we go to another visit to a senator or a representative's office, or take a friend and take someone else with us, one at a time.
I definitely agree, and I fully support, you know, reaching out to your congressmen and your senators in this time. If you're upset about something, you know, let them know about it. I mean, and if you don't necessarily hear back right away, you're probably not going to right now because of the call volumes and the emails and everything is just so high. It might take them a couple weeks, but you know what? If they get back to you with something, whether it be some canned email or not, you know, you at least got that response, and you will, by the time hopefully you get your response, know where they stand. And then you know where you need to, you know, build your work further. Or if you've still got concerns, you know, let them know that. But this also, I think, is a good learning opportunity for a lot of people to better understand this is how it's supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
And also to better educate themselves on what's happening around them. I've seen, by this, like tenfold in the response of people trying to get through to their congressmen and their senators means people are paying attention and they're starting to read about what are these policies? What does this person stand for? I mean, it might be a little bit too late considering, you know, the election was a couple months ago, but you know what? At the same time, we're building an education for the future.
Yeah. Never too late. And I want to throw in a quick PSA for the staffers. Please, please, please be nice to them. They're just regular working people like you.
Yeah,
and they have
to
take phone calls from a lot of angry people. I mean, it's probably not that different from being, you know, like a telemarketer. Like, you have to sit and listen to people complain all day. So just be nice to them. Be brief, because they have a lot of phone calls to get to. If you can do yours in 1 minute, that means if you didn't take 5 minutes, then the 4 more people can get in and give their opinion. That's my PSA for the day.
And Buck, we have got to run. We are out of time. But real quick, who's coming on with you at 2:30?
We have John Rurink with MIRS, the Michigan Information Research Service. We're going to talk a little bit about Michigan's effort to basically get rid of state income tax. But the bottom line is, who's going to pay?
All righty then.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, Buck, we'll catch you later. That was Buck Gino of Work in Progress Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman, and you've been listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.